Golden West, Season 1, Episode 10. Unable to ride, Atham walked alongside as Abigail and her father rode slowly. She wished there was something she could do to help, but unfortunately stopping so the giant had time to rest was all they could do for him. The saddlebags had a good collection of food, rope, and for some reason a lot of nails. One bag even had several pouches of tobacco. They had been riding on and off the better part of a day. None of them talked. They all just kept an eye out for the horse. Mr. Lamone shouldn't have gotten that far. They should have met up with him by now. Once the soldiers had stopped chasing him, he should have circled back to meet them. She felt compelled to break the silence of the late day.
"I think we should stop and eat something."
Her father slowed even more and looked back at Atham.
"He's not moving too well. I think I should ride ahead. Perhaps I can find the horse and come back and pick the two of you up, and it'll give all of us time to rest."
The mule appeared to be pulling Atham along. Atham, head down and shuffling his feet, didn't appear to be holding up well. She had to get him to sit and relax for a while. She nodded to her father. He gave a little kick and was off. Abigail dismounted. "Atham, let's rest here." He didn't say anything, just sat on the ground and pulled the mule to a stop. He ate an end of bread she gave him. His breathing came in rough and ragged breaths. All she could think of was how tired he was, and in need of rest he must be after all he'd gone through, just trying to gain acceptance among humans that would never accept his kind. How could society allow anyone to suffer in such a way?
"My father went on ahead to look for Mr. Lamone and the horse. He should be back shortly. Then you can ride and relax."
Atham nodded.
"Once we're back on, I can make us something good to eat. This bread is pretty stale."
As if to demonstrate how bad the bread was, she tore off a bite and began to chew. Again, Atham nodded, but still he didn't look at her. Instead, he slowly ate his own piece of bread. They had only one canteen of water. They'd allowed Atham to drink the majority of it. Even though the heat had made her thirstier than she'd ever been before, she knew it was a small sacrifice for her friend. Anything to help him get better. She didn't begin to worry about her father until after the sun had started to set. If it got dark, he could miss them. It was at that moment she realized that she'd never started a fire. She wasn't even sure if she could. Her father had taken care of that. Atham lay on the ground, sound asleep, and would be no help at all with starting a fire. Should she start a fire? What if the soldiers from the fort decided it was a good idea to track them down? What about the horses? Should she take off their bridle and saddle? That, she thought, she'd have an easier time figuring out, but they'd need to have everything ready for when her father returned. The spot they stopped was near a small group of trees. The land had a lot of low bushes, but little else for cover. Now that they'd been sitting for some time and she focused on something other than Atham, she felt exposed as she looked around.
"Atham, I think we should move over there."
Atham grunted, rolled onto his back, and pulled the blanket, his only protection for his upper body, tightly about himself. She nudged him with her toe, and he rolled onto all fours and stood up. He looked down at her. His hair hung about his tired face, making him look like the monster people must perceive him as. She pointed to the group of trees. She led the horse, and he led the mule. With the sun setting, a chill rose into the air. Atham coaxed the mule to kneel down. Once the animal was down, he laid against it and draped the blanket over himself and it. At least he'll be warm. The trees weren't good for climbing, with branches too high up and the trunks too smooth for climbing. The only way she'd get any higher to look in the distance was to stand on her tiptoes. She'd climbed back into the horse's saddle, but her thighs and rear hurt something fierce. She just had to know where her father was, and when he'd be back. The only thing she could do was put her back against Atham's side and watch in the distance her father had disappeared in. The drone of the crickets and the howls of the coyotes caused her head to dip several times, but she refused to allow herself to sleep. She rubbed her sore legs and tired eyes and tried to keep from falling asleep. It was a losing battle.
"I think I dropped it right over there."
Jax pointed to a small outcrop of rocks covered in scraggly bushes.
"I chased a rabbit over there that way and hid behind those rocks when I saw the giants go into the canyon over there. I'm sure they didn't see me."
"Good, good." Reginald crept low along with the boys. The canyon had to be at least a mile away, but if they were spotted by the giants, they'd be overtaken before they could reach the wagon. Unfortunately, they needed that rifle that Jax had dropped in his panic. The canyon was difficult to make out, as both sides were of the same mountain, and unless the sun hit it just right, as the rising sun did, you would just think it was nothing more than a jagged wall. Perhaps getting right up onto it, they'd be able to tell just how deep the canyon ran, but they weren't about to get any closer than they needed to. Grass brushed their ankles. It was the tallest cover on this wide plain between the top of the hill they lay on and the canyon. They needed to make their move before any giants came out to perform any duties they would need to perform. "Jess, how fast can you run?" "Oh, I'd be motivated to get out there and back fast." Before Reginald could say anything else, Jess ran fast and low toward the outcrop. He didn't zig or zag, just ran as fast as he could. Just before he got to the outcrop, he tripped over something and tumbled. A short crawl back to where he fell over, and he held up the rifle. Reginald signaled for the boy to hurry back. They needed to get to the wagon, reload, restart, and get on their way. They didn't have time to celebrate.
"Look over there! That can't be good. You think that's any good?"
A column of black smoke rose into the air. Not just a column, but a column of three small puffs, followed by a long puff, then nothing. It rose into the air and was taken by the wind.
"I got it! Looks like Jax was running back when he dropped it."
Jess stopped talking and turned to see what they were staring at. Reginald pulled him down. "I think we might have company in a moment." He wanted to turn and get the boys back to the wagon as quickly as possible, but he knew that he needed to keep watch. The last thing he wanted to do was be taken by surprise. Sure, giants weren't that quiet, but regardless, they'd come up fast. As he feared, three giants appeared from the canyon entrance. They wouldn't be able to fight their way out. The best they could hope for was mercy, or a chance to talk their way out of the situation, and just be on their way unmolested.
"No, this ain't good. We gots to get out of here. We gots to run."
Jack stood, but again Reginald pulled the boy down. "We're not going to run. It won't do us any good. Jess, I need you to run back to the wagon as fast as you can. Hide the rifle. Jax and I will be there with company in a few minutes."
"But I didn't ask for a discussion. There's no time. Be loading wood, and we'll be there soon."
Jess turned and ran.
"Wait a minute. Why does he get to go back to the wagon? I'm just as fast as he is. This isn't fair. We all should be running for it."
Reginald held up a hand to silence Jax. The giants weren't running towards them, as they thought they might be. They walked. Why hadn't they come running, trying to catch the people trespassing on their land? This didn't make any sense. Sure, Reginald had expected a confrontation, but he thought he would have to talk his way out of it. This didn't make any sense. Without air, the giants continued walking in a straight line. If a person had been walking, it would have taken at least 15 minutes. The giants managed it in just under 5. Before they arrived, Reginald stood.
"Oh, this ain't going to end right at all. Me and Jess should have just stayed in St. Louis. You're going to get us killed by giants."
"They want to talk. They don't want to fight. They want to talk. They don't want to fight. Look, none of them have a weapon." All three giants were unarmed. Reginald had never had a run-in with a giant. Save the one he'd seen in St. Louis, these were the first he'd encountered. He had no idea what to expect from them. But seeing one that looked like he belonged in New York threw Reginald for a moment. A giant dressed in a brown twill suit, bowler, and wire-rimmed glasses wasn't what he thought he'd see out this way. The other two wore common-looking overalls and nothing else. If it weren't for their overly large heads, they'd look human. The three stopped a fair distance away, and the one with the glasses said, "What brings you this way? You're a goodly distance from the normal trail that humans normally take." "We were taking a slightly more direct route." "This way is more difficult for horses. You don't expect them to think you're on foot, do you?" "I have a vehicle. It doesn't require horses." The giant squinted and cocked his head to the side. He pursed his lips and looked at the ground.
"Now would be a good time to go." Jax pulled on Reginald's shirt.
"Where did you start from?"
Reginald wasn't sure how to answer that. What could this giant be searching for?
Best to just be honest and hopeful that they'd be on their way shortly.
"I started in New York. I met these two boys in St. Louis, and we've been traveling together. We're on our way to California."
The giant's eyes widened. "St. Louis? You didn't happen to see another giant during your travels? Perhaps wounded? Traveling alone?" This giant couldn't possibly mean the one that Abigail had brought back to the hotel, and Reginald had tried to get them caught with. The same giant that had fled from town just a short time before more giants attacked the city. Could there be a reward for information? Did these giants want the other dead? Or worse, were they related, and would hold Reginald accountable? Best to try not to give any information at all. We haven't run into any giants on our way. It's been quiet. We had just stopped here for the night. It's just chance that we ran into you. Once more the giant looked toward the ground. So much depended on them leaving as soon as possible. They didn't stand a chance that the giants chose this moment for a fight, but that didn't appear to be their intent. It was as if they wanted more information. I am looking for a giant that left St. Louis. If you have some information, anything, it will help me. Are you certain you haven't seen a giant in your travels? No. No giants, I'm sorry. He didn't want to sound impatient, but he didn't like standing and being stared at by these three giants. He just wanted to get on the wagon, get going, put as much distance between him and this place as possible. The giant with the bowler turned and nodded to one of the other giants. The overall-wearing giant shrugged a bag off his shoulder. This isn't the best place to hunt game. Once you're in the mountains, times will be tough. I had hoped you would have information for me regarding my brother, and I would have given this to you as a reward. As it stands, I can't let you go off without something. All I ask is that you forget we were here. The three giants turned and walked off, none of them looking back.
Can we go now? We got to be going before they change their minds.
This time Jax was right. Judging by the size of the bag, it would be far too heavy for any of them to carry alone. They would have to bring the wagon around and pick it up. At least they would have a good amount of food for the rest of their trip. The only thing that would change in their plans at this point would be heading further north for about a day. That would put them in the middle somewhere between the trees where they could replenish their wood supply before heading into the mountains. As for the giants, Reginald was certain to forget about this place, as he was to forget his own name. Even so, they'd done him a favor. He wouldn't give up this location. He may be able to return here some day, should he get himself into trouble. This would, after all, be the last place anyone would ever look for a fugitive, and even if they got anywhere close, the giants would be certain to keep him safe.
Hey, did you hear me? We gots to go!
Yes, Jax, I heard you. Go and help Jess load the wagon. I'll be there in a moment. Jax ran off. Reginald stood and watched until the giants disappeared back into their canyon. Something pushed her leg.
Honey, wake up. Honey.
Abigail opened her eyes and saw her father standing and shading his eyes.
I'm sorry it took so long. I finally found the horse, but I couldn't get it started to come back and pick you up. I'm afraid we'll have to walk to it. I hope the two of you...
He took a second to yawn and stretch.
Got a good night's sleep. It's going to be a difficult day. How's Atham?
The giant snored.
I think we just need a minute to wake up.
Abigail shivered in the morning air. She finally got to her feet and gave her father a hug and a kiss on the forehead. He'd been up all night. He deserved at least a small thank you. Atham started moving and groaning.
How are you this morning? She asked.
Ready to go back to sleep.
That's not an option this morning. We're still too close to the fort, and if they're mad enough, they may take the daylight to come looking for us. It's best if we get moving. I've brought some food, at least.
He held out a bundle. It was warm when I left the horse, but I'm afraid it cooled down quite a bit. The meal was meat stuffed in some of the bread they'd gotten from the fort. Abigail began to eat. They hadn't had much to eat in the past couple days. Atham consumed most of his meal in two bites, then closed his eyes and savored. The mule had gotten up and joined the horses in getting their own breakfast.
Really, we should be going.
Wait a minute, Father. You said you found the horse, but what about Mr. Lamone? He should have been with it.
I assumed the same thing. I found it quite strange that he wasn't there. Everything looked fine. I'm just unsure as to why it won't start. All of our things are there, and everything appears to be in order. I just need to regain my focus, I think.
So Mr. Lamone had disappeared again. Why? Where could he have gone? Was he following them?
He'd already tried to warn them about something, but disappearing in St. Louis was one thing. Disappearing out in the middle of nowhere was another thing entirely. She wanted to mention this to her father, but he already appeared concerned enough.
Atham stood. His bones creaked as he stretched.
I am ready. I am still sore, but I will do better at keeping up. Perhaps in 2 or 3 more days I will feel well enough that we might part company. Abigail didn't want to think about that right now. She knew that if Atham could go all the way to the mining operation, that he could find work. Surely those out there in the West weren't adverse to giants as the rest of the country. Giants settled out there. They had to. Perhaps she should have read 1 or 2 of those books her father had read about California and the West. She and her father rode while Atham walked. His bruises looked worse, but he walked a little straighter, and they didn't need to stop nearly as much as they had the night before. In just under an hour, they were at the horse. The animals were tied up, and Atham settled himself on top of his blanket, exposing his torso to the sun's warm rays.
"I'm not sure why it won't start. I'm afraid I don't have plans for this machine. I had hoped we'd make it all the way to California without issue. I guess hope didn't quite get us all the way there."
"Well, where's Mr. Lamone? He should be able to tell us at least why it stopped."
Abigail pulled her hair back into a ponytail and just stared at the horse. It was big, ugly, black metal mixed with dirty gears, and suddenly she didn't like it. Not one bit.
"I don't know where he got off to, but we need to see what we can do to get this thing started."
Something on the platform flashed in the morning sun and caught her eye.
"Father, what's that?"
She ran over to the platform and picked up her golden butterfly. She thought she'd lost it in St. Louis when the hotel collapsed, or when the room exploded. Other than her new clothes, she hadn't been able to recover anything.
"Look, it's my butterfly!"
This one little piece of home, the place she'd so desperately wanted to return. She'd just been given a gift. Perhaps it was time for them to call an end to this adventure, part ways with Atham, and just go home. Her father could easily get his job back with Mr. Huntington, or even start his own business. They didn't really need to go to California, did they? A tear slid down her cheek.
"That's wonderful, honey, but I don't think it's going to help us get the horse up and running again."
Her father sounded defeated, like he also wanted to just turn around and go home. She had turned to the controls. All the dials were down, all the levers were down, all the knobs had been turned to zero. Mr. Lamone hadn't just stopped, he'd shut the machine down completely. He was still trying to stop them from getting to California. He'd left the butterfly to remind them what they'd left behind in New York. He had wanted to convince her father that they should just turn around and go home, that they shouldn't keep going. Her longing for home turned into anger. She didn't want to be manipulated. This entire trip, she'd been manipulated by her father by going to a place she didn't want to go. She was manipulated by Atham and his suffering and her guilt over what she'd caused him to go through. And now she'd just been manipulated once again by Mr. Lamone trying to trick her into going back home. She'd come this far. She wasn't about to be twisted and turned around again. Her mother had always taken control of a situation. It was time for her to do the same.
"Father, what did you try so far?"
"Oh, honey, no more honey. Just tell me what you did." She looked at the butterfly in her hand. Sure, it ran on springs, but replaced the springs of the boiler, and you had something similar to the horse. It was just a larger version of the toy she held in her hands. Why couldn't she help her father get the horse up and running once more? She lost track of time as the two of them went through each gear, each coil, each spring. The boiler had been refilled, the burner restarted, and the levers and knobs adjusted. Even though it made lots of noise, it just didn't start, no matter how much they tried. It was almost as if... She looked down at her butterfly, and the spot where the gear had been taken out.
"The engine isn't engaging."
Her father adjusted his glasses.
"How could... There must be a missing gear. We've gotten it started. We've looked all over. There must be something we've overlooked. A gear that must be missing, that will engage the engine with the rest of the gearing on the horse. I'll stand here and pull levers. You look inside, and you should be able to see where there's moving inside the horse, and there's a missing gear."
He didn't move right away, but stood looking at her with his mouth hanging open. She cleaned a spot on his forehead and kissed him. She spent a few minutes pulling levers while her father looked into the horse. She thought that perhaps she'd been thinking incorrectly.
"Hold on," her father shouted. "Pull that lever again."
She pulled the lever.
"Back again?"
She pushed it back.
"One more time."
He disappeared deeper into the horse. She didn't want to pull the lever with him inside, but she knew nothing was going to happen. A scream came from inside the horse, followed by laughter.
"What happened?"
He dug his way out of the inside of the horse and ran back to the platform.
"It's good news, bad news. Good news is I see where it's not engaging."
"And what's the bad news?" She almost wished he'd start with the bad news.
"This."
He held up a small gear.
"I don't see what the problem is."
He pulled the gear into two parts.
"That is the problem. Do we have anything we can replace it with?"
"I don't think it'll be that easy. See, if we're going to try and replace this part with a solid piece, we'd need to take quite a bit of this machine apart. We need to do something to get this gear back together. It doesn't appear to do much, but it needs to stay in place."
His shoulders slumped.
I'm afraid we're stuck here unless we can figure out a way to get the two pieces of metal to stick back together, with nothing but sand and tree sap. Atham sat up from behind the horse, his face a twist of pain and exhaustion.
I think I may be able to help.
Unless you're a metallurgist or a magician, I don't see how. Her father set the two pieces of gear down on the platform.
Father, let him talk.
She motioned for Atham to continue.
There's a plant in these parts. Its sap is like an acid.
Atham stood and pulled the blanket over his shoulders.
If we can find it, then perhaps we can effect a repair on this machine.
Are you saying use the acid from this plant to melt the gears and fuse them back together? Like some kind of a primitive weld?
We've used this method for quite some time. Granted, we haven't built any amazing machines, but we've used metals for houses, mine supports, and other such things.
Abigail wiped her forehead with the back of her hand.
Then we'd better get going. It'll be dark soon.
They left the horses and mule to fend for themselves while they went in search of this strange plant. Abigail had difficulty grasping a plant with acid for sap that could weld metal together. That seemed a little far-fetched. She would have to hold off judgment until she saw the results for herself. The sun had started to set, yet Atham stumbled about on the uneven terrain in search of this plant.
How will we harvest this plant? If it's got some kind of acid inside it, how do we get it?
Atham, for the first time in many days, smiled.
We just pull up the entire plant. Once we get it to where we need it, we'll break it open.
It felt good to see him smile, to know that he was healing. Most likely he was healing physically, but she wanted to think that because of her and her father, he would learn to trust people. She wondered if other people would ever trust him.
Atham, I think we should head back soon. It's going to get dark.
Atham took off his blanket and wrapped it around his hand. He crouched and slowly lowered his head. Still moving slowly, he reached out and took hold of something that looked like a small dead tree. Abigail felt her chest vibrate and realized that Atham must be saying something in tones so deep she couldn't hear, but instead feel him talking. Still moving slowly, he pulled the plant out of the ground. The roots came up from the dry soil and revealed many nodules. Atham turned and smiled again.
I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like it.
Her father reached out to touch the plant. Atham pulled it away slowly.
You don't want to touch this.
Oh, right.
They took the plant back to the horse and started a fire. Her father climbed inside the horse and waited. Abigail held out half of the gear. She wished for a pair of thick leather gloves. She didn't have any, and thankfully Atham was ever so careful. He dripped the sap onto the gear. It smelled of some strange medicine that Abigail was certain she'd taken as a child, but couldn't recall just what it had been. At first nothing happened. Then a white froth appeared on spots where the acid had been placed. She handed the gear into her father, careful not to get any inside the horse. After treating the second half in a similar manner, it too was passed inside.
I'll just hold this for a minute. It smells terrible.
How did your people discover this plant? Abigail asked.
I only wish I knew the story to tell you. I'm afraid I could only guess, but we do have stories. I cannot recall anything about this plant. I just know that we've built some wonderful buildings over the years using it.
All right, I'm coming out. I think this will hold. It'll need a cure overnight, but what would we do without you?
Atham sat by the fire and gazed into the flame as he chewed on a piece of stale bread. The smile he had had was now gone, but she could tell the giant felt better for proving useful. For the first time since they'd encountered him, he'd been able to help rather than hinder their progress. Abigail knew this was the time their relationship with Atham would change. She could just feel it. After a short, quiet meal, they all settled down. Tomorrow they would once again be on their way to California. It didn't matter how much Mr. Lamone tried to stop them. They were going to make it. She would see to it that they did.